I began to play the clarinet when I was 10 years old. And my late mother was a concert violinist and a teacher. And my father, who's still living, is, you know, an amateur singer, and he acts. Acting is a second career. So we always had music and in the home and a big emphasis on the arts. So I was always surrounded by that. But my mom said to me when I was 10 years old, I had the opportunity to study a musical instrument in school. And she said to me, "You're 10 years old. You're way too old to play the violin." She said, "You're washed up, kid." So anyway, she said, "Maybe you want to play a wind instrument like the clarinet or the flute." And she said it in that order. So pretty much I ended up with the clarinet. But I was also very drawn to the instrument because I had been listening to pieces like the Rhapsody in Blue and the Creation of the World, which had these great clarinet solos. And then when I was 11, I heard the great soprano saxophonist and clarinetist Sidney Bechet on a recording. And I decided then and there, wow, I really want to become a professional musician. I loved the way Bechet communicated with his instrument and told stories with his instrument. And it was about a personal voice, and it was about something that was recognizable and uniquely his. And while there was all this music in my home, it was kind of my parents' world. And somehow through listening to Sidney Bechet, I got a glimpse into my own world, into jazz, into improvising. And my career ended up going in a kind of this double-pronged direction because as a kid, I was playing jazz and playing classical music. So I was sort of satisfying my own desires as well as my parents. And then that kind of became a natural thing for me. I went to a high school called the High School of Music and Art in New York City. And then I went to a liberal arts college called Sarah Lawrence College. And then my junior year, I went to the Paris Conservatory. And then I got my master's at Juilliard. So when I got out of school, I sort of had a crisis of confidence about jazz. I thought, you know, I really need to focus only on classical music. And I think I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to find that personal voice in jazz. So I abandoned jazz in my 20s. And in New York City, I was doing all kinds of things, playing contemporary music, chamber music, freelance gigs as an orchestral musician, playing principal clarinet in various orchestras, like the Martha Graham Ballet Orchestra, the American Ballet Theater, and different things like that. The New Haven Symphony, I was principal clarinet there for 4 years. But when I was in my early 30s, I thought, I threw the baby out with the bathwater. I wanted to improvise again. I wanted to do creative stuff that I really did, not just interpret the music by composers. And so by a series of chance meetings and coincidences, I got into klezmer. And klezmer is Eastern European Jewish celebration music. And it's the music of my ancestors. It's the music of the generation. Well, let's say this, that in the late 19th century, early 20th century, there was a huge wave of immigration from Eastern Europe to the United States, Jewish people. And they were fleeing horrible anti-Semitism, terrible poverty, very, very hard conditions. My grandmother remembered her village being burned down and just awful things. And so they came to America in search of a better life. And in that wave of immigration were my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and also many, many people who were playing klezmer music. And they came to the United States and made recordings for this immigrant population that was still hungry for the old culture. But at the same time, there was this great desire to assimilate. So that's what my grandparents were doing. They were becoming Americans, and they were abandoning the Yiddish language, and they were abandoning the culture. I didn't grow up with klezmer music. I thought life was Leave It to Beaver, you know, with the mother and father and 2.5 children. So then in my early 30s, this desire to return to improvising, so just from a purely artistic point of view, but also from a human point of view, I had this great desire to connect in a deeper way to my roots and to my heritage. And so I started playing klezmer music. And at first, I just was doing it as a kind of a hobby. I thought, I'm a professional musician, and I'll do these little sort of gigs on the side when I pick up it was hardly any money, but just for fun. And I started meeting all these people who spoke Yiddish as a living language, who were children of garment workers. And so they were living in Brooklyn, speaking Yiddish. And I was thinking to myself, only the very religious Jews, the Hasidim, spoke Yiddish. But now here were these people who were a little bit older than me, and they were speaking Yiddish. And so that was really interesting to me. And then I started playing with a band called the Klezmatics in the late 80s. And we went to Europe, and we arrived at these festivals, and there were 1,000 screaming, dancing, partying young Europeans who were, you know, in their 20s and 30s, young people just having a great time. And we were not playing in a nostalgic way. We were playing amplified with a kind of a pop attitude. We were a kind of a Jewish punk band. And then there were all these people having this great time and partying to our music. And I thought, wow, there's a real future for this. So I stayed with the Klezmatics for about 7 years. And then I left that band and went out on my own. And in fact, at that point in the mid-1990s, I made a couple of records under my own name for John Zorn's Tzadik label. And then I was also invited by the Kronos Quartet to record Osvaldo Golikov's The Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind in February of 1996. And that was a very important recording for me because it was a real mix of my two worlds. It was a piece of contemporary classical music and yet completely saturated with klezmer. And Osvaldo actually notates it for klezmer clarinet and string quartet. And so by that, he means bring that whole style, that whole sound world, which is a very, very particular way of playing. So, you know, all during this time, I was, of course, listening to these old records from the 20s to learn how to play the style. But at the same time, I was mixing in my own influences of jazz, of funk, of rock and roll, and, you know, screaming electric guitars and the great, like the cry of the John Coltrane saxophone, and trying to bring a whole 20th, 21st century attitude to the music and create my own language. And I think that whole fear that I had in my 20s, I really conquered that fear. And if I could say that there's one great achievement in my life, it was to find a personal voice and a personal style in playing music so that you can, quote unquote, drop the needle, so to speak, or you listen to a CD or listen to a track at any point and go like, ah, that's David Krakauer. I recognize that sound. So interestingly, the piece of Osvaldo Golikov's that I recorded in the mid-90s, I re-recorded in a version for string orchestra and clarinet and klezmer clarinet with a young group called A Far Cry from Boston. And we got nominated for a Grammy. So that was a very, very big thing with the Dreams and Prayers record, which is just a beautiful record all around. They did a gorgeous job, a lovely young conductorless string orchestra. So these have been interesting things. And then another very major project I did was with a hip-hop producer who goes by the name of So-Called. And then together with So-Called and Fred Wesley, who was James Brown's trombonist and arranger in the late 60s and early 70s, we did a project together called Abraham Incorporated, which brings together Jewish and African-American traditions in a real kind of atmosphere of sharing. But this was more about an overt kind of sharing of traditions, bringing each of our traditions to the table and making music together. That's always been my goal. And I think as a human being, too, I see that as so important, the role of building bridges in music, building bridges between peoples, between cultures. And as the world progresses in the way that it's progressing, which makes me unhappy at many times, I think this is really an important thing. And I see that more and more as my life's work, even more than just playing a musical instrument or composing or being a quote unquote artist. I think that's all important. And entertainment is important. And of course, the arts are so important as a counterpull to some of the more difficult and evil parts of life today. But I think even more important is to try to create dialogue through the arts.